Did you know that nearly the entire Indian subcontinent used to be under the rule of the Muslims? You see, in 636, the Muslims defeated the great Persian army at the Battle of Al-Qadisiyah, eventually leading to the downfall of the empire and bringing the Muslim caliphate to the banks of the Indus River. And little did they know that on the other side was a vast expanse of warring tribes and kingdoms and empires, each competing for this great land of ancient civilizations and fertile soil, many trying and failing, and none having succeeded in conquering and uniting the entire subcontinent in its thousands of years of history. A task which only the Muslims would ever accomplish in only just a few hundred years. It was now the early 700s, and Muslim merchants began building trade networks throughout the Indian Ocean. Seeing an opportunity, sailors from the Med tribe began pillaging Muslim ships from their port cities in the east. Soon, the neighboring kingdom of Sindh had become a base of operations for pirates and highway robbers, and a refuge for Arab warriors who had rebelled against the Umayyad dynasty when they took control of the caliphate. In response, the Umayyads sent a message to the Maharaja of Sindh, offering him a deal. If he would help the Muslims quell the piracy and return the Arab rebels to the caliphate, the Umayyads would offer his kingdom protection and a guarantee that Sindh would remain autonomous. The Maharaja refused this offer, and so the Umayyads prepared for war. Under the command of the 16-year-old general Muhammad ibn al-Qasim, the Muslim army marched east, meeting the local tribes along the way and gaining their support. It was now 711, the same year that Tariq ibn Ziyad crossed the Mediterranean Sea and began the conquest of Al-Andalus. Muhammad ibn al-Qasim and his army, now supported by local Buddhist and Hindu tribes, crossed the Indus River and began marching on Sindh. Soon the Umayyads came face to face with the Maharaja, whose army was significantly larger than their own. Knowing they could not win an open battle, Muhammad ibn al-Qasim placed his army on higher ground and waited for the Maharaja to attack first. As the Maharaja approached, the Umayyads let out a volley of arrows and fire. A huge fireball was shot at the Maharaja himself, landing a direct hit on his elephant, causing it to panic and drag him off the battlefield. With the Maharaja now gone, his army was demoralized and soon fell apart, and the Muslims were able to charge in, using the chaos to their advantage. Finally, when the Maharaja broke free of the deranged elephant, he grabbed a horse and charged it into battle, hoping to gather his army around him. But fear had already gripped the hearts of his men, and the battle had already been lost. Charging in only brought him death. Under Muhammad ibn al-Qasim, the Umayyads had won the battle, and the entire province of Sindh was annexed and brought under the Muslim caliphate. There it remained under the Umayyads and later the Abbasids for 150 years until internal conflict rocked the caliphate, and soon Sindh and the other provinces in the east began to separate themselves from central authority, and a number of new dynasties began. From the late 800s to the late 900s, the lands between Persia and Sindh changed hands as the Muslim dynasties would rise and fall. And while the Muslims hadn't made any further military ventures into India, struggles continued with the Brahmin Shahis, a neighboring kingdom which fought for control over Peshawar and Kabul. But all that soon changed when in 998, a Turkic soldier by the name of Mahmud of Ghazni took the throne of the Ghaznavid Empire. His first campaign was in 1005 against the Karmatians of Multan, an Ismaili sect which was most infamous for having sacked Mecca and temporarily stealing the black stone from the Kaaba. After that, in the year 1009, he managed to defeat the Brahmin Shahis at the Battle of Chach, taking control of the region of Punjab and bringing it permanently under Muslim control. Mahmud continued heading expeditions into the Indian subcontinent, leading his army against the Indian kings of Kashmir and Rajasthan and Gujarat and the Doab. In each case, he allowed the Hindu kings to maintain their autonomy after being defeated. Only Punjab was fully incorporated into his empire. Over 150 years later, in 1173, a new king was crowned ruler in the capital city of Ghazni, beginning a new dynasty known as the Ghurids. For the next 13 years, the Ghurids fought with the remaining Ghaznavid loyalists, vying for control over Peshawar and Lahore and the rest of the empire's territory. But by 1186, the Ghaznavids had been defeated, and now the Ghurids were in power. and it wouldn't be long before a new threat would rise again from the east. At the time, a man named Prithviraj Chauhan ruled the land of Rajasthan as part of the Chahamanas dynasty. And during the 1180s, he began a war of conquest, attacking the Chandelas and the Gahadavala kingdom to the east, and creating an alliance with the Chalukya dynasty in Gujarat to the west. It was clear that Prithviraj was gaining power and becoming a threat to the Wurid Empire, and eventually the two forces would meet in battle. In 1191, at the First Battle of Tarain, Muhammad Ghurid launched an attack, firing arrows at the enemy army. However, Prithviraj managed to outflank Muhammad Ghurid on both sides, surrounding him and crushing his army, forcing him to retreat. Muhammad Ghurid then managed to get his revenge when he assembled an army of 120,000 men and returned to the same battlefield the following year. At the Second Battle of Tarain, Muhammad Ghurid divided his army into five units, with four flanking Prithviraj's army from each side and one remaining in the center. When the battle began, the center unit feigned a retreat, making Prithviraj believe that he had won the fight, and so he charged after the Muslims. Exhausted from this attack, the four flanking units quickly surrounded Prithviraj, and the center unit stopped their retreat and turned around. Prithviraj's army was now completely surrounded and exhausted, and the Muslims put an end to their empire. After this monumental victory, the lands along the northern Indian plains, as far east as Bangladesh, soon fell under the control of the Wurid Empire, laying the foundation for Islamic rule in northern India. Muhammad Ghurid eventually returned back to Central Asia, leaving the newly conquered Indian states under the command of his general Qutbuddin Aibak and making Delhi their capital. Soon after, in 1206, Muhammad Ghurid was assassinated and Qutbuddin Aibak was left to rule Delhi independently, beginning the Mamluk dynasty of the Sultanate of Delhi. For the first time ever, there was now a Muslim sultanate in the heart of India, and soon the Delhi Sultanate would become the most important kingdom in the entire subcontinent. The first decades of the Sultanate were spent consolidating power in the lands recently conquered. Very little efforts were made to expand the empire, as the entire focus of the Sultanate was on organizing internally and on defending India from the now emerging Mongols. Throughout the 1200s, the Mongol hordes destroyed the Muslim kingdoms in Central Asia, eventually reaching as far as the Abbasid Caliphate and ending it with the destruction of Baghdad. Not wanting to experience the same fate, the Muslims of India became the wall of defense for the continent, tirelessly repelling the Mongol Empire for the next 100 years. However, the Mamluk dynasty would eventually end, as in 1290, a new ruler took the throne of the Delhi Sultanate, beginning the Khalji dynasty. Under the Khaljis, Muslim armies led by Gujarati generals expanded the empire deep into southern India. And later, when the Tughluq dynasty took control of the Delhi Sultanate in 1320, they continued their expansion, reaching as far as the city of Madurai in Tamil Nadu. By 1335, the Delhi Sultanate had reached its peak, but corruption began to plague the kingdom, and both Muslims and non-Muslim rulers led a series of revolts which threatened to tear the empire apart. In 1384, a major conflict broke out between the old and ailing Tughluq Sultan and a young vizier, which eventually led to a mini-civil war in and around Delhi. Another civil war broke out in Delhi only a few years later between different ruling factions. By now, the empire had become a shadow of its former self, and most of the territories the Sultanates once governed were now independent states, ruling without any care for the Sultan in Delhi. And to make matters worse, a new power was emerging in Central Asia, led by Timur, a descendant of the Mongols. And although his empire was Muslim, he took advantage of the situation in India, invading the last remnants of the Delhi Sultanate and sacking the capital in 1398. Now, seeing the capital in ruins, one of Timur's generals decided to take the throne for himself, beginning the Sayyid dynasty in 1414. It was a short-lived dynasty lasting only 36 years, as it was later replaced by the Lodi dynasty in 1451. Under the Lodis, the Delhi Sultanate experienced somewhat of a revival, but still, the empire remained weak, as the trade routes that once kept the capital alive had now been all but abandoned. It was a dynasty of fierce warriors, but there was only so much they could do to keep the dying light of Delhi alive, and soon the torch would be passed on to a new empire, once again coming in from the west. In 1519, a descendant of both Timur and Genghis Khan began his journey to India, fleeing from the political chaos of Central Asia. Together with his army, Babur headed for Punjab, which was still being ruled by the Lodi dynasty at the time. Initially invited by the local governor, Babur sent an ambassador to the Lodis claiming that he was the rightful inheritor of Punjab, since the region had at one point been part of Timur's empire. In response, his ambassador was detained, and the Lodi sultan overthrew the local governor who had invited him in the first place. When Babur and his army finally reached Lahore in 1524, the Lodis attacked them, forcing them to retreat. The message had been made clear. Babur declared war. In 1526, the two armies met at the First Battle of Panipat. Using a combination of Ottoman and Mongol tactics, as well as advanced Ottoman cannons and newly invented gunpowder weapons, Babur's men managed to surround the Lodis and vanquish their army. Babur had now defeated the last remnants of the Delhi Sultanate, and under his new rule, the Mughal Empire would soon come to dominate India. From 1526 all the way to 1707, the Mughals expanded their new empire from the Himalayan mountains and the Gangetic plains in the north to the Deccan Plateau in the south. Expanding from Bengal to Gujarat to Kabul to Peshawar to Bijapur to Bihar to Agra to Lahore to Delhi to Golconda to Kashmir to Multan to Ajmer and all the provinces and regions in between. It was a massive empire that rivaled the greatest superpowers at the time and was said to have held a quarter of the world's wealth, reaching its peak in 1707 at the death of the sixth Mughal Sultan, Aurangzeb Alamgir, the final and perhaps greatest ruler of the Mughal Empire. But as we all know, all things great or small come to an end, and eventually this empire too would see its last days. And as it would crumble and fall, a new empire would take its place soon. But this time the Muslim rulers didn't come back. At least, not from then on until the present time. After all, who knows what the future holds? Like a fall for more, Muslim Facts.
I wish you to recollect that the greatest conquerors are not always the greatest kings. The nations of the earth have often been subjugated by mere uncivilized barbarians, and the most extensive conquests have in a few short years crumbled to pieces. He is the truly great king who makes it the chief business of his life to govern his subjects with equity. Here, Aurangzeb says that being a fair, ethical ruler ranked above controlling territory, a rather surprising hierarchy to find embraced by the head of an expansionist dynasty,